Good evening and happy Valentine's Day. It's good to see you at the February 14th meeting of the Joint Committee on Marijuana Regulation. And as we settle in, I'm going to share some positive news, which is that we have the green light to move the start time of our committee from 5:30 to 5. All right. So if you still have a loved one after you've spent your whole evening at the marijuana committee, you can tell them that in the future it starts at 5, not 5:30. Great. All right. And now with that, so future meetings of this committee will start at 5, not 5:30. With that, we are going to move through a number of bills today, and we're going to start by opening an informational meeting on marijuana criminal code. So I'm opening an informational meeting. This is out of order for some of the things that we have on the agenda, but we're going to cover everything on the agenda. And I'm going to invite forward Rob Bovet with the Association of Oregon Counties to talk about some work that was done over the course of a number of meetings during the interim. Welcome, and please state your name for the record and let us know what you're thinking about.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rob Bovet, legal counsel with the Association of Oregon Counties. Here to just briefly overview from a 10,000-foot level what you have before you as Senate Bill 302, how this came about and how it's in front of you. I'm also going to mention briefly Senate Bill 303, which has now been thank you, by the way, Senator Pruszynski, for sending Senate Bill 303 to this committee so we can have the full package here in front of you when the time comes to consider and possibly move these bills. So first I should back up and say that we've been working on marijuana reform legislation in the offense code for quite a number of years, and it predates Measure 91. But as you all know, Measure 91 kind of changed everything. It shifted the focus from enforcement related to users to enforcement related to bad actors selling into the black market. And that was a big shift for law enforcement to look at as well. Your Deputy Legislative Counsel, Mark Mayer, and I had conversations as early as December of 2014 about the need to really rewrite the entire marijuana offense code, starting with removing marijuana itself from the State Controlled Substances Act, because we treat it differently than any other controlled substance. It's much more like alcohol, as you know. But that is a daunting task. In fact, it was so daunting that Mark and I didn't want to start on it until you guys were done in 15 and 16. So we started in earnest in the spring of last year, because in order to remove something from the Controlled Substances Act, we not only just have to amend the CSA, we have to amend literally hundreds of statutes that refer to controlled substances and replace those with words such as cannabis or marijuana, or leave them intact unamended, depending upon whether it's logical to include or not include. So it's a big job, hence why 302 is so large. We went about this by having Co-Chair Leininger called stakeholders to a series of meetings, which I was present, and Mr. Mayer was present, as well as representatives from the ACLU, OCDLA, a variety of other folks, the governor's office, the attorney general's office. And then each of us took it upon ourselves to vet the proposals out to our various constituencies, and I took it upon myself to make sure that law enforcement was notified about these negotiations and dealings. So Senate Bill 302 and Senate Bill 303 are the work product of that work group. Why do we have two bills? Because Senate Bill 303 deals with the marijuana MIP statute and cleaning that one up. The problem is that we really needed to clean up all of the MIP statutes, not just marijuana, alcohol as well, and all of the related statutes relating to MIP, and make them all essentially work the same, so we don't have confusion. Municipal judges know what's going on, and we know how to process them. The problem is, of course, that Senate Bill 302 relates to cannabis. And if we're going to amend all the alcohol MIP statutes, which we need to tune them all up, we need a separate vehicle. So hence, you have a complete package in Senate Bill 302 and 303, but they are, in fact, two bills. And now you have, as of a few days ago, 303 in front of you as well. Because it is such a large bill, it probably should come as no surprise that a lot of folks have read it carefully and found all kinds of technical glitches and errors. So we have the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 302 and the dash one amendments to Senate Bill 303. But that's just the beginning. We're now having a second round of people read through stuff, and we're finding a few more technical glitches here and there. So we hope to be able to bring maybe dash twos to both bills before you at the time when they're ready to move, so we can fix all of our technical snafus and errors that we made in crafting such a big piece of legislation. So with that as a background, let me tell you what you'll see in 302. So 302 itself starts out with a whole lot of bold language, new sections that, with some exceptions, basically mirror exactly what's in existing state law. And then it's followed by a whole series of amendments to a litany of different statutes to deal with conforming amendments, basically, to insert or not insert the word cannabis and or marijuana into various statutes. And I will tell you that there is an equal number of statutes that we did not amend because there was no reason to. So we analyzed literally hundreds upon hundreds of statutes to help create the middle section of 302. In terms of where we went from there, that was a complex project and would have made no substantive changes to the bulk of marijuana laws in terms of how they read. But we took the opportunity to continue to try to improve what essentially have been band-aids that we've been putting on the marijuana offense code for four legislative sessions now, and to make some comprehensive policy improvements to the operation of these statutes as well from all the key stakeholders' perspectives. From a law enforcement perspective, they're interested in bright lines and adequate tools to do the job we're asking them to now do, which is focus in on shutting down or helping to shut down the black market. I would start by noting that we have, reached some level of agreement among the stakeholders on the changes as a package. I could pick out quite a number of things in Senate Bill 302 that law enforcement is really not happy with. I'm sure that folks from the criminal defense lawyers could pick out a whole bunch of things in 302 that they're really not happy with. You have to look at this as a package. And I'll just mention a few things just to focus your attention. I would actually start specifically with Section 126, believe it or not, of the bill. This is the repealer section. What goes away entirely is all of the high-level enhanced marijuana offenses, specifically things like delivery of marijuana within 1,000 feet of a school, manufacture of marijuana within 1,000 feet of a school. Those high-level felonies just go away. In replacement of that, you'll find in 302 some more narrow felonies. One's a high-level one, one's a low-level one, the high-level one being focused in specifically on extraction labs at home. We've had quite a rash, and the rash continues with extraction labs. The original proposal was to essentially just add those to the arson statute, just like we did meth labs in 2005 and we've done with others. But for reasons that were negotiated, we decided not to include it in that particular statute because it had other ramifications for Measure 11 we didn't want to touch. So we created a new section that reads mirror to that to just deal with this specific issue. You'll also notice in Senate Bill 302, we've made some adjustments to the possession statutes, including a low-level felony for large-scale possession, as well as some adjustments of the various levels that really reflect a more smooth transition of offenses from one level of possession, delivery, or manufacture to a higher level of possession, delivery, or manufacture. Most of the other bold language here is either clarifications of existing statutory language or carryovers from existing statutes in the Controlled Substances Act that currently apply to marijuana. And that's kind of my very high-level overview. There will be a need for amendments to both of these bills to fix, like I say, a whole bunch of technical problems, and we're still sorting through all of those. Nothing of any real substance that I can see, but if we're going to do this and clean it up, we need to clean it up right.
So, committee, I want to let folks know that I have asked Mr. Bovet to also describe the MIP statute, and then we're going to invite forward three other people who are involved with the work group to give their perspective on things that they thoughts that they have on this package, and then we're going to open it up to testimony.
Yeah, and finally on 303, you should look at 303. It's at your committee now, but we didn't get it to your committee in time to actually notice it and put it on your agenda. But I would urge folks to have a look at Senate Bill 303, which is an OLIS, and then the -1 amendments, which Adam now has. I don't know that we have any more technical amendments to that bill thus far, but the concept here is to make both the MIP and MIP alcohol and MIP marijuana statutes work the same. And operate the same in the system, so there's parity and similarity, and that required us to not only amend those two primary statutes, but there's all kinds of auxiliary statutes that attach to the MIP statutes that relate to things like driver's licenses and a variety of other things that we had to fix as well. Problems with those statutes that judges and others have been kind of complaining about for quite some time. So we figure if we were going to rewrite all of the MIP statutes to make them actually make sense and be readable, we needed to fix them all. And so that is essentially what 303 is.
Okay, great. Committee, do you have questions for Mr. Bovet, or should we hear from the other three members of the work group before we ask questions?
One quick question. Rob, in the materials it has that staff put together, the Senate Bill 302 criminal changes, and it's a chart.
Yes.
On the right-hand side category, what does that refer to? Because is that category one, and that's all fours? Is this levels? Or
These would be the criminal crime categories in the sentencing guidelines. You'll notice a lot of them are just ones, which
yeah.
is...
I just want to make sure I knew what you're talking about, and we got it on the record. So
yeah.
These are what is categories as to what's on the sentencing guidelines for felonies.
Exactly.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Senator Ferriero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you, Mr. Bovet, have a copy of the bill in front of you?
I do.
Page 103, section 122, line 10.
122, line 2.
Line 10.
Oh, line 10.
Yes, thank you. Guys are outfitters.
Right. And I'm sorry, Senator, your question?
From this point on to the end of the printed version I have, it's all about guides and packers mm-hmm. and hunting licenses and bag limits and sightseeing flights and aircraft operations and outfitters.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Madam Co-Chairs and Senator Ferrioli, I agree. We didn't change anything. Oh, no, I take it back. If you look on page 104, line 8, this is a conforming amendment. We had to remove the words except marijuana.
There it is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I should reiterate, and there's hundreds of sections here, but there are also hundreds of other statutes we looked at and decided we didn't need to amend. So it's just, this is what made this task so painful. It's just a
yes.
big job to take a drug out of the Controlled Substances Act. It's
yes.
just a really big
and
job.
And Madam Chair, the addition of the emergency clause on page
109.
Well, can you tell me what the emergency is, please?
Oh. Co-chairs and Senator Ferrioli, I don't know that there is an emergency, as you know. We often put emergency clauses on bills like this, but we have operative sections, and that will be should be an operative section here that basically says it only applies to acts committed on or after the effective date. But if the emergency clause, if people want a specific date, or if they want to not do the emergency clause, they want to do 90 days after. I really don't think anybody that I've heard from has any angst over any of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Yes, sir. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To what Senator Ferrioli said, though, I mean, you were referring to the emergency clause on 302?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm also thinking of 303 as well, and that I do see most definitely a need for because of what we try to do with the MIP piece of it, because you've got juvenile directors all over the state needing and waiting for that fix. Just a thought.
It's situational, and if there is an emergency, all we need to do is document that emergency and the need.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a fair point. I think, you know, in some instances, the longer bill makes things that have been felonies into lower level crimes, and so there's a period of time in the interim in which people could get hit with a more significant crime classification, and it deals with the issue of super, you know, people who are transporting extremely large amounts of marijuana, and whether that should be treated the same as. So, I mean, I think the it's a question of urgency from a policy perspective. There's definitely an argument that we'd want it to take effect right away, but if folks had strong feelings to the contrary, I'm sure open to having that conversation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, so thank you, Mr. Bovet. We have anyone else to questioning Mr. Bovet? Great. Now I'd like to invite forward Kimberly McCullough. Did you have?
Okay. I'm just waving to Ron.
Okay. Kimberly McCullough, Eric Dietrich, and Gail Meyer, please. You can move forward in any order, but start, please, by stating your name for the record.
Chair Leininger and members of the committee, my name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm with the ACLU of Oregon. I'd like to just say at the outset that I'm grateful for the collaboration and all of the hard work on this bill. It really was painful to go through all of those references, but I think that it was a lot of collaboration, and I think that was a good result. As has already mentioned, there were a number of compromises in the bill, but there were several things in particular that we set out hoping to see and that we do see in this bill, and I'm wanting to highlight those things. The first is just removing marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act. For myself, part of where this originated, at least from my thinking, was my own confusion over the marijuana criminal penalties, because even though marijuana has essentially been divorced from the rest of the Controlled Substances Act in spirit, it's all intertwined and intermixed with the Controlled Substances Act. So it's extremely difficult to follow. And I realized when I talked to some practitioners, and the folks next to me can speak to this, I'm sure, with a little bit more expertise, but I spoke to practitioners who were really frustrated by that and have all sorts of charts, and it was extremely difficult for them. So I think that it will make things a lot easier for folks who work in the criminal justice system, and really is just following suit with the way that we have alcohol in its own set of the statutes. The next piece of it was just the 1,000 feet of a school enhancements, which we realize actually when they were designed to try to help protect children actually end up disproportionately impacting youth, who are the ones who end up getting caught in those areas, and also disproportionately impacting people who live in cities where there are a lot more schools. And 1,000 feet is about 3.5 blocks, city blocks. So if you've got a whole bunch of schools in an urban area, that can actually blanket most of the urban area. The other piece of it that we really wanted to see was creating tiered penalties in delivery and manufacture. And what I mean by that is in possession, we already have where if you possess a little bit more than what's legal, you just bump up to one level of penalty, and when you then go into a higher level, you go to a higher penalty. But with delivery and manufacture, if you delivered or manufactured just over the legal threshold, you bumped up into a very high, high harsh penalty. And so what we basically did is create a buffer where there's the high penalty, but if you're in that buffer area, you're going to have a more moderate moderate penalty, which we think is fair for folks who may inadvertently end up in that area. So those are the main things that I wanted to highlight, and I will turn it over, I think, to Eric first.
Co-Chair Leininger, Co-Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Eric Dietrich. I'm Deputy General Counsel for the Office of Public Defense Services. Our agency does not have a position on this bill. Before taking that job, I was a public defender in Portland, a member of OCDLA, and so I attended the work group meetings, and so I told Gail Meyer I'd be here today to give the perspective on how this project went from the defense perspective. Removing marijuana from the Controlled Substance Act led to many changes in this bill, but there are a lot of things that we didn't get to, and that was helpful. What I mean by that is by actually getting the list together of statutes that were affected by marijuana being in the Controlled Substances Act, we were in this predicament of, you know, we have controlled substances over here, marijuana is somewhere in the middle, and alcohol over here. We were trying to weigh, you know, with these statutes affected, were we at a consensus yet as to when a particular statute was ready to be treated like alcohol. And I think overwhelmingly we weren't there, and we talked about that, and that was an important conversation. But we have those statutes together now. And going forward, we know what statutes we need to look at because of what has been described as this painful process to determine where marijuana should be treated in relation to criminal consequences. The second thing that I took away from this work group was we were really trying to shore up the legal market in Oregon, shore up, making sure that there were tools in place so that the legal market could be regulated appropriately. And so while it is true that the one statute, the within 1,000 feet statute was removed, the commercial drug offender enhancement statute, it was maintained in the bill. That's a statute where if someone is operating a drug enterprise in a commercial manner, they can be prosecuted at a level 8 felony offense. The work group felt it was appropriate to keep that sentencing enhancement within this bill. There's another felony, causing a person to ingest a marijuana item. That's a very serious felony offense. We decided to keep that in the bill. There's another statute. This is in Section 12 of the bill, application of marijuana item to the body of another. That's a serious felony offense, and the work group decided to keep that in bill. So there were a lot of, you know, serious felonies that the work group felt appropriate the law enforcement continue to have in regulating this legal market. Another issue that came up was the export, the import-export statute as it relates to marijuana. That statute makes it a Class C felony to import or export a marijuana item. If you attempt to engage in that behavior, it's a Class A misdemeanor. And so there is a particular manner of exportation that was hard to be classified as a felony. And you will see that in Section 15 of the bill, where the work group came together and came up with a narrow, tailored approach such that if a person places a marijuana item in transportation for hire, that constitutes the completed crime, and they would reach the felony offense earlier than they would under current law. Mr. Bovet already mentioned the arson statute and the need to have that updated so that these BHO labs would have a felony statute that would be appropriate to deal with them right now. Pretty much the reckless burning statute is the only statute that applies to this dynamic. From a defense attorney's perspective, we had concerns about Measure 11 and the implications of creating a new Measure 11 offense, and so we compromised on a serious felony that would not fall under Measure 11. Section 20 provided an affirmative defense for licensees who, in good faith, believed that they were complying with the law. So if someone's license has lapsed, and they had a reasonable belief that it had not lapsed and they could document that, it would give them some protections from criminal prosecution. And I guess the last thing I'd want to talk about is the tinkering of the penalties for the criminal offenses that is done in sections 4 through 7. You know, previously there was no amount of possession of marijuana that could constitute a felony. This work group put together a level of possession that would constitute a felony. And part of that was the reality of case law in Oregon that if you possess a certain amount of a controlled substance that's inconsistent with personal use under State v. Boyd and the way in which our statute defines delivery as an attempted transfer, the work group kind of came together and realized there's a point of marijuana where if you do possess it, it's reasonable to infer that it's to deliver it. And so we have that enhancement in there for the where you get to a C felony. Thank you.
So thank you. Yes, Senator Pozanski.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. So Eric, thank you for one coming up today. I need you to direct me to the section that you're talking about on the arson. The reason I ask is because I have a member on the Judiciary Committee who has a bill that would actually make that type of offense an arson. And so I just want to see if we're working across purposes or if this is already taken care of in this bill. Do I need to worry about moving it? I need to talk to the member and let them know where we're at.
Chair Leininger, Chair Burdick, and Vice Chair Brzezinski, are you saying you want to answer that, Mr. Crump?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the arson crimes start on Section 8 and Section 9.
8 and 9?
Page 7.
And I can say that I had a conversation with Mr. Bovet before coming in, and it seems like they are slightly different. This one creates a specific arson statute. I believe the member in your committee, if Mr. Bovet told me, was arson in the second degree. So I do believe they are slightly different.
All right. I will compare the two just for the committee. Senator Olson, who sits on, he's not on the committee. I made a mistake. He's not on the committee, but he has introduced a bill which we were planning on moving forward, but at this point we'll do a cross-check to see, making sure we're not doing more. The other thing is I do want to acknowledge that Eric did not say in his vita as to his tenure here as counsel on judiciary before he went back to do private practice. So welcome back to the building.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
In our last installment, we learned that there could be a period of time when OLCC licenses are pending approval. And the OLCC's conclusion is that they would assume those licenses were in effect until the licensee is otherwise notified or the license is, in fact, approved. So there's, that appeared to me to be a gray area where you may not have an affirmative defense, where this statute may, in fact, infer that they're acting without a license. They may be acting in good faith, but the fact might be proven in court that they have no license, and that might put them in a pretty serious bind. So I'm wondering how we coordinate the OLCC's assumptive continuation of a license versus the point in fact that there's a hard date on the expiration of that document.
So I'm going to ask these folks to speak to it, but my understanding is that this is an affirmative defense in which if you're acting in good faith, even if you're mistaken, if you had a reasonable basis for believing, or if you were acting with the belief that you were doing okay, then that would mitigate the harm. So we're trying to not let people who make an honest mistake, albeit a mistake, not suffer harsh punishment as a result of their honest mistake. And if you want to characterize that some other way, let me know.
Hello. Co-chairs and vice chairs and members of the committee, Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Are you playing?
It looks like Jesse Sweet is moving around, like he might be coming forward and would be invited if you'd like to. But go ahead.
May I say, Senator Farioli, we did not debate that point that you're raising. I don't think anyone in the room was aware of it. And so perhaps we need to go back and revisit those specific provisions.
I am aware. I would put the affirmative defense in the same category as the rebuttable conclusion. It is subjected to argumentation by a number of different participants, and the affirmative defense may fail. Mm-hmm. So, good faith is great. A hard date with a stamp on it from the licensing authority is better. So I just want to make sure that the idea that we're going to go forward with is that OLCC, the defense attorneys, the prosecutors are all on the same page with regard to how they'll treat those good faith affirmative defenses.
Okay. Mr. Sweet, do you want to weigh in on that issue directly, or should we transition? Okay, go ahead, and then we'll go to Gail.
For the record, Jesse Sweet, policy advisor with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. At the commission, part of my duties is to supervise our hearings unit, where lay representatives take all administrative actions against the license. And I'd like to clear up what I feel is some ambiguity on the terms for license renewal. Under Oregon's Administrative Procedures Act, licenses are assumed to be operative until they are not affirmatively non-renewed. And the commission, as well as other administrative agencies, are required to give notice to the parties when their license is not renewed. We're required to give notice to the parties when we cancel or revoke a license. So from my perspective, there should really never be any ambiguity as to whether a party is licensed or not. And that's what the Administrative Procedures Act ensures. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, it's helpful. Ms. Meyer, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Our committee, the OCDLA Legislative Committee, discussed this bill yet again today. And I do want to acknowledge that there are members of our association who, on balance, are not happy with the bill. They very much oppose the idea of continuing to make felonies relating to cannabis crimes. And on balance, though, our legislative committee did believe that, on balance, this is a step forward in the direction that we hope ultimately to get all drug policies to go. And I acknowledge that really this is an amalgam of fixes proposed by a bunch of stakeholders that got into the same room because we were trying to pull marijuana out of the CSA. It wasn't because there was consensus agreement on what anyone was trying to accomplish. This was talking about this painful process these wonderful people had gone through. And finally, it was time to get the stakeholders in the room, and stakeholders started putting proposals out onto the table. So this is an amalgam of fixes. This is not an advocacy bill. This isn't a consensus bill. It's a compromise to peacefully coexist, and not everyone agrees with every provision in it. So you will hear testimony from folks from, the advocacy world, some of them the criminal defense bar. Not thinking on balance, this is a proposal that should go forward. The OCDLA Legislative Committee felt that compromise being what it is, it's a step forward in the right direction.
Senator Prezant.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I had an opportunity, Eric, to look at the two bills in the sense of the other one is Senate Bill 323. It is one that basically substitutes the phrase controlled substance in place of where it was methamphetamine, and it would be, it looks like a second degree Class C felony, where the extract one is going to be a Class A felony. So is the group still meeting and talking, or is this pretty much the end of the group work? I see Rob Bovet still in the room, so are y'all still looking at making other fine tunes?
We can do that.
I just want to put this on the record because if I remember correctly, we may be in fact moving marijuana out of the Controlled Substance Act as defined. That would mean that an individual who committed an arson under this new bill, if it went forward, would be penalized at a lesser level than what we would be doing on this. And it just seems for parity, we may want to make certain that we're treating them appropriately. Mm-hmm. Whatever that result would be, I'm not saying mm-hmm. or advocating which should go which way, mm-hmm. but it seems to me we need to have that bigger picture addressed.
Good. Okay. I think after this conversation, it will make sense to have a have a check-in and do some adjusting. So thank you. Appreciate you place marking that. All right. Do any other comments for this panel? Did you have anything? Okay, so thank you, panel, for your work. Thanks, everyone who was involved with what has been oft described as the excruciating task force on this CSA bill. I think really appreciate the hard work and efforts to make things more clear and make sense in ways that, on balance, I think are a step in the right direction. We have Lee Berger, who is here from Portland Normal, who would like to testify, and that is the only other person we have signed up to testify. Okay, we're opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 302, and we're actually going to ask everyone to keep their comments to 2 minutes now, because we have not very much time and a lot of people who want to testify on social consumption.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chairs. Leland Berger.
Chair?
Yes.
I just want to add that people, this is a short time limit, so people have till 5 o'clock tomorrow to put any written material they want in the record, and it will appear on the list for the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Leland Berger. I'm a lawyer. My bar number is 830201. In April, I will have been practicing for 34 years. I saw the governor in December. She said, you're going to be working yourself out of a job, and that's been the point of the drug policy reform work I've been doing here since 1999. I did prepare some comments. I would encourage you to look at the materials. I do have specific objections. The long and short of it is that legalization was meant to be an end of criminal penalties. As far as I was concerned, in drafting 91, I advocated for that unsuccessfully, and it's just not appropriate 2 years after legalization to be increasing penalties and creating new crimes. I did want to respond to instead to some of the questions that came up during these presentations. The effect of Senate Bill 323 would be that although marijuana is safer than alcohol, it's not as safe as methamphetamine, which is, you know, just ridiculous. The delivery statute is a problem. The attempt, I'm kind of surprised, frankly, that that portion of the bill is here. I mean, I agree with removing marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act. I can tell the committee in Washington State they did that as to cosmetics, but they did that for the purpose of making cosmetics unregulated. In Oregon, of course, you need a topicals license. There are new high-level offenses. There wasn't a trade-off on the 1,000 feet for home gardens. Crime Category 1, Senator Przanski, is listed for misdemeanors, even though that only applies to felonies. The commercial drug offense statute has always been problematic as applied to marijuana, and I discussed that in the materials. Ingestion seems, frankly, like a crime, like a solution looking for a problem. Along with the attempt and the exportation, is the same problem as the delivery. Again, I would encourage you to review the materials.
Great.
I did a thorough job, and if I can be
of
any assistance in further refining this, I'd be glad to help out. Co-chair,
Madam Co-Chair.
Appreciate it. Yes, sir.
Lee, if you could just put whatever else you had in writing.
I did, and I filed it. In speaking with Mr. Crawford, he said to be sure and get it in before 5 yesterday so that the committee would have an opportunity to review it. And it's there.
I'm going there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair.
All right. So with that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 302. And we are going to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 319. And I'm going to ask Mr. Crawford to describe that bill for us. We have no one signed up to testify.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 319 requires medical marijuana dispensaries and recreational marijuana retail locations be at least 1,000 feet away from a school unless certain conditions are met. It allows local governments to adopt ordinances allowing medical marijuana dispensaries and marijuana retailers between 500 and 1,000 feet away from a school so long as a physical or geographic barrier separates the location and the school. It declares an emergency and is effective on passage. We do have our fiscal and revenue paperwork. It has a minimal fiscal impact as well as a minimal revenue impact.
And now I'm going to turn to Senator Prezonsky, the proponent, to describe the reason for the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, if you remember last year, in the last session, we had a bill that was dealing with giving local governments the flexibility in citing locations that were within 1,000 feet, but at least 500 feet away. Unfortunately, many eyes, including mine, staff, and LC, we missed something because when the bill came out, it basically reversed it and said it has to be within 500 feet of a school. So that is why we have an emergency clause placed on this bill, because we knew what we didn't want is to have these facilities next door to a school. We wanted to give local governments the opportunity to say if there was some type of artificial and natural barrier between 500, as long as the school was, or the location was going to be at least 500 feet away from the school, that they could take in consideration for their own public community standards whether they wanted to allow for those establishments to be within 500 feet to 1,000 feet. And so because of the reverse distance, it current law says that this only applies to applications that would be for facilities within 500 feet of a school. So that is why we brought this forward, and that is why we've asked for the emergency clause, so we can actually make certain what we all intended to vote on and what we all had agreed to is actually what the law will be. I will tell you that the other part of here is that we've did an efficiency for local government to allow them how they want to process these applications, so they don't have to actually have a formal ordinance passed for each and every one that comes before them, that the local governments can actually allow their administrative process to be used instead of requiring some type of formal action on each and every one before their elected officials. And so this will give the local officials the tools to do it in an administrative form if they want to, or if they want to keep it formal with a ordinance on each and every one, they can still do that. That's the extent of the bill, Madam Co-Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, either that or we're going to have to build a heck of a lot more schools, one of the two. So.
All right, then. Thank you. Any other comments on this bill? All right, I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 319.
Chair Leininger, I move Senate Bill 319 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Wilson moves Senate Bill 319 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, the motion passes, and Senate Bill 319 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Prezonsky, would you like to carry that?
You bet.
Great.
Then you need to carry on the House side.
Yeah. On House the House side. Someone like to carry that on the House side? Could make Julie
Fahey. I think we have, don't we have a new member to the committee?
That is right.
Yes.
No more.
Seems like an easy one to take. So.
Yeah, you want to take that? That's
not fair.
Yeah, that's good. All right, so we'll have Representative Fahey carry it on the House side. And then we will open a public hearing on, can we do
just a fix?
Okay, we're closing the work session on Senate Bill 319, and now we're going to open a public hearing on both Senate Bill 307 and Senate Bill 308, cannabis lounges and temporary event licenses for 307, and on 308, the Task Force on Social Consumption. And Mr. Crawford, if you could describe those, and then we're going to move through a pretty robust list of people who want to testify. And again, we're going to stick to 2 minutes and invite you to submit written testimony so that we can get through, hopefully, everybody before the end of the committee.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to take these slightly out of order, starting first with Senate Bill 308. Senate Bill 308 establishes the Task Force on Social Consumption of Cannabis, specifies the task force membership and rules, requires the task force to create a report identifying legal barriers and opportunities for the social consumption of cannabis in Oregon, directs the task force to submit the report to interim legislative committees related to business no later than September 15, 2018, sunsets the task force on December 31st, 2018. Senate Bill 307 allows the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to issue cannabis lounge and temporary event license types starting January 1st, 2018, allows the consumption of marijuana on the premises of cannabis lounges, allows the consumption and sale of marijuana by licensed retailers on the premises of temporary events, exempts from prohibitions on public use, including restrictions set forth by the Oregon Indoor Clean Air Act on the consumption of marijuana items in designated areas of premises for which temporary event or cannabis lounge license types have been issued, prohibits cannabis lounge or temporary event licenses in cities and counties that have not adopted ordinances allowing the consumption and sale of marijuana items in a public place, takes effect 91 days after signing down.
All right. So now I'm going to invite forward Don Emmerich, Madeline Martinez, and Naomi Forcash to testify. And again, you each have 2 minutes. And Mr. Crawford is going to keep time for us. And then on deck, we have Vince Porter, Leland Berger, and Sam Chapman. You may begin in any order.
Okay. My name is Madeline Martinez, and I opened the first cannabis cafe in the United States in 2009 to provide a place that was safe and out of public view for cannabis patients with the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program. It has developed into a social use space where people can come, and they have to be 21, they have to show IDs, and it is a place that people can come and enjoy camaraderie of their peers, because so many people were in deep depression due to the fact that they were isolated because of the medicine that we were using. And because cannabis consumers, we always feel like lepers in society. We needed a place of our own, as I said, out of public view. And I feel it's really important because so many people now are forced to go to the street. You can't smoke in apartments, HUD housing. A lot of people live with their children, and they have grandchildren, and they're not allowed to consume in their homes. We can't consume outside. People are in parking lots and in their cars consuming, and that's really unfortunate because we're taxpayers and members of society that choose an alternative. And I think it's fair. And here's the thing that I'm most annoyed with is the fact that we have carved out an exemption for cigar bars and hookah lounges, which I don't have a problem with that. I don't go there because that's not what I choose to do. And people who come to a social cannabis cafe or a social lounge, they've chosen to consume cannabis. And I think it's fair for us to have our own space.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My name's Naomi Forcash. I'm here specifically to speak on the temporary event licenses.
Okay.
I'm very happy to see this in action. The concern that I have is that it's lumping all marijuana events into a single category of being a consumption-style event. Personally, I head up the Hemp and Cannabis Fair, which is a non-consumption event, and for the past 3 years, we have worked on providing a safe and educational place for people to come and learn about marijuana. There has, up until last fall, been allowed gifting of product, no sales. And for me and my peers, that's incredibly important for people who don't want to smoke in public to be able to take the product back to their house and try it in a safe way. It's allowed cannabis and cannabis products to get in the hands of people who wouldn't otherwise have the option to try it. So having all events kind of lumped into this consumption license is certainly concerning. So I would recommend a tiered licensing system where you have the consumption license and then you have a secondary license allowing for gifting, potentially sales of marijuana, but not use. That license may have a different fee structure. There would certainly be different rules. And then possibly even a second, a separate license for a business-to-business event where cannabis is on display but not in use. So I would recommend this to be considered. Otherwise, you're going to have events like mine that are providing a safe and educational place for people to go that are going to lose our venues because we're forced to get a full consumption license in order to have any product given away.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairs Burdick and Leininger, Vice Chairs and members of the Joint Committee of Marijuana Regulation. For the record, my name is Dawn Emmerich. I'm the Director of Public Health for Clackamas County. Thank you for the opportunity for allowing us to speak in front of you this evening. Clackamas County opposes Senate Bill 307 for three reasons. Number one, Senate Bill 307 would violate the Indoor Clean Air Act. The Indoor Clean Air Act, also known as ICAA, protects the health of all people of all ages by reducing the secondhand smoke exposure. In 2015, the legislature expanded the ICAA to include marijuana and inhalant delivery systems. These expansions strengthened Oregon's law and positioned Oregon as the national leader in smoke-free workplace laws. Exposure to secondhand smoke exposure among employed Oregon adults decreased by 45% from 2001 to 2015. Number two, secondhand marijuana smoke is not harmless. The Oregon Retail Marijuana Scientific Advisory Committee reviewed the existing literature on marijuana smoke and determined there is no safe exposure to any type of secondhand smoke exposure, including that of marijuana. Marijuana smoke, both firsthand and secondhand, contains many of the same cancer-causing chemicals in tobacco smoke. There is no evidence that the ventilation of smoke within enclosed areas is effective in mitigating the health effects of secondhand smoke exposure to humans. Number three, the existence of public spaces where marijuana can be smoked or vaporized legally would likely result in an increase in the ICAA complaints from the public. It would be difficult to visually distinguish between the various types of inhalants during ICAA site visits, making enforcement challenging, time-consuming, and costly. When asked, 75% of adult Oregonians believe that people should be protected by secondhand marijuana smoke outdoors. Additionally, Senate Bill 308 would establish a task force to study social consumption of cannabis. It is recommended that we look at Senate Bill 308. Thank you very much.
Great. And if you have more that you wanted to say that's in your written remarks, you may submit it.
It's been submitted. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Okay. Next up, we have Vince Porter, Leland Berger, and Sam Chapman. And on deck, we have Stacy Michelson, Mike Rocklin, and Dr. Katrina Hedberg.
Co-Chairs Burdick, Leininger, members of the committee, my name is Vince Porter, and I'm a lobbyist here representing the Oregon Cannabis Association. I'm here to testify in support of moving forward with social consumption legislation that clears up the ambiguity about public consumption that's happening around the state. The Oregon Cannabis Association is comprised of over 100 cultivators, processors, edible makers, dispensaries, and allied businesses, including laboratories, security, and transportation companies throughout Oregon. As Oregon and other states move beyond prohibition, we seek clear and sensible regulation that promotes health and safety in our communities, excellence in our products and services, and compliance at every level. One of Oregon Cannabis Association's top priorities is a clear framework for public consumption of cannabis for adults. We understand that it's in the public interest to have defined limits regarding consumption, so those who are consuming and those who are enforcing laws are working from the same page. We've heard from our members, and from what we hear on the ground, there's a disconnect between current law and the practice happening around the state that needs to be addressed. It's OCA's goal for Oregon to continue to move towards 100% legal adult-use cannabis consumption. In order to achieve that goal, the social consumption issue must be resolved. And we understand and appreciate the complexity of the issue and acknowledge there are still concerns that need to be addressed. We believe those concerns can be addressed in this session, either through Senate Bill 307 or the other social consumption bill, Senate Bill 788. OCA does not have an opinion on the differences between those bills, and we're confident that either bill would be a good solution if the bill was debated and moved in this committee. If for some reason the committee and the advocates of the bills are not successful in addressing relevant concerns, it's the OCA's position we must set forth a path for a statewide social consumption policy. For that reason, we also support Senate Bill 308 as a fallback to other proposals. Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sam Chapman with New Economy Consulting.
I'm here to testify in favor of both Senate Bill 307 and 308, and I wanted to just give you a little bit of background on what 307 does. Creates two license. Well, actually, Adam's already done that, so I don't need to do that. Who cares about this bill? There are many demographics that are affected by the current prohibition of being able to smoke or use cannabis outside of one's own home. People do not own their own homes, medical patients who otherwise need to be able to consume in a safe place, parents not willing to subject their children, and alcohol retailers who potentially face the liability of losing their liquor license as these activities are happening at bars. Along with the tourism industry, flight attendants, taxi drivers, dispensaries, hotels, they're getting asked on a daily basis, where can we legally consume this product? And the answer is one of two things. It's nowhere, except your own home, or go down the street, or go in your car, or there's a park three blocks down the road. Those are not acceptable answers, and those are not doing the industry any favors. Senate Bill 307 is a pragmatic, sensible solution for this. Now, the other aspect of this bill is that it is what we call an opt-in, which is very similar to a bill that Mr. Berger is working on, which I support, but this is the only difference in that Senate Bill 307 does not require any locality to take action or to have these licenses. They have to proactively want and work within their own local ordinance to pass and allow for these licenses. That will allow certain cities that are interested in this bill and these licenses to work hand-in-hand with this commission so they actually have pilot cities that can help them understand rules and regulations. Very quickly, I know that there is a decent amount of opposition from health organizations, and I wanted to briefly highlight some of these concerns with clarifications. One, there was a study that was just mentioned regarding the 83% of Oregon adults that agree to people who should be protected from secondhand smoke.
Sorry to interrupt you, but we...
That was for a tobacco survey.
Okay.
Thank you.
I hope that you will submit that information for the record.
I will,
okay,
and I have.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Berger.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, could you just remind the speakers they don't need to be on top of the microphone because I'm getting a lot of feedback.
Yes.
Is this close enough?
Yes.
No, you need to be farther away. They're very sensitive.
Yeah. The closer you get, the less we hear.
Madam Co-Chairs, members of the committee, I neglected to share with you that I'm also a co-founder and board member of the National Cannabis Bar Association, and I'm thrilled to let you know that I chair the Oregon State Bar's Cannabis Law Section, the third law section associated with a state bar behind Colorado and Michigan. The concerns that, you know,
reintroduce yourself.
My name is Leland Berger, and I'm here with Portland Normal. Great. On behalf of Portland Normal, advocating on behalf of consumers. Last session, you may recall, Harrison Conley testified before this committee that we legalize marijuana except you can't use it indoors or outdoors. That's the situation that we're in. We were told when we met with many of you last session to meet with people who were opposed, find out their concerns. In my testimony, written testimony, you'll see we did just that. We took your advice. And we're told that, well, it depends how it's written. And so the concerns that are raised can all be resolved in rulemaking. One thing that the Liquor Control Commission has done, although they didn't at our, we had requested that they create a consumer committee to review the rules. But other than their denial of that, they've done a really outstanding job of including everybody in their rules advisory committee meetings and being receptive to all concerns. The Retail Advisory Science Committee is a tremendous disappointment. You may recall last session this committee was faced with considering whether to advise pregnant women to not consume cannabis, and we presented testimony from the written documents from the National Advocates for Pregnant Women. They described the Retail Science Advisory Committee's requirement that these signs be posted in medical dispensaries as gender discrimination. I appreciate the Oregon Cannabis Association's fallback position, but you know, again, we had a conversation last session. We did the work. The concerns can be addressed in rules. And then lastly, I know that if I could just finish my point. In 788, which like 303 was filed but not in time to be heard tonight, has the 3400 opt out provision.
Expanding that to require an opt-in will expand the availability of cannabigatory.
Thanks
That's
so
all
much.
I have. I appreciate Co-Chair Leininger the additional 17
now we've
seconds.
Thank you so much. We now have Stacey Michelson, Mike Rocklin, and Katrina Hedberg, please. And on deck, we have Morgan Crowling, Stacey Yerge, and Paul Lewis, please. You may proceed in any order. Just begin by stating your name for the record, please.
Co-chairs Leininger, Burdick, members of the committee. I'm Dr. Katrina Hedberg. I'm the state health officer with the Public Health Division of the Oregon Health Authority. And you all have written testimony about 307 and 308. But just to briefly state our point, which is really our concerns about the legislation have to do with the exemptions to the Indoor Clean Air Act. As was mentioned already, Oregon was at the forefront when we initially passed the Indoor Clean Air Act back in 2001. And since then, there have been a number of provisions which have actually tightened the Indoor Clean Air Act to protect employers or employees in the workplace from being exposed to secondhand smoke. Now, the issue about smoke is that, sure, there's many different kinds, but we know that smoke contains particulate matter that's very harmful to the lungs, whether it's directly smoking tobacco, whether it's being exposed to wood stove smoke, marijuana smoke, air pollution. We just saw recent studies that came out of Asia when people are exposed to smoke. So our main concern about this really has to do with the provisions around cannabis lounges that allow for smoking of cannabis indoors. In regards to 308, the task force, if that passes, we would appreciate the opportunity to have someone from the Public Health Division sit on that task force that's not currently in the recommendations because, again, of our concerns about maintaining Oregon's Indoor Clean Air Act with the goal of protecting the health of Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chairs Burdick and Leininger, for the record, my name is Stacey Michelson with the Association of Oregon Counties. I know that my colleague Rob comes before you all very often, but I'm here from the public health perspective. I have our Health and Human Services portfolio. And it's from that lens that I'm here today to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 307. As the local public health authority, counties have a vested interest in issues impacting local air quality, exposure to secondhand smoke, and the overall health and wellness of their citizens. And from this perspective, we're opposed to any additional exemptions to the Indoor Clean Air Act, and therefore cannot support allowing cannabis lounges. And in regard to the temporary event piece, the public health view is that such events, temporary or otherwise, have a norming effect on the use of marijuana. You know, an example was given earlier regarding hookah lounges, and we've seen that in areas where hookah lounges exist, we tend to see an increase in youth use of tobacco in those neighborhoods. And so for that reason, any sort of temporary event through marketing existence, it seems to pose a public health issue, particularly in terms of youth use, which is one of our primary concerns. I don't know if it made it into the record yet or not, but there has been submitted a letter from the Children's Health and Marijuana Coalition in opposition to Senate Bill 307, of which AOC is also a part. I just wanted that noted on the record if it hasn't made it in yet. And overall, you may find it odd to see AOC speaking against a bill that really does have a local control element. I know that normally that is our mantra, but there are a few issues where our members do prefer to see statewide policy, and this is one. With so many complications in the rollout around marijuana, one of the issues our members mentioned when we discussed this bill yesterday was a concern that regulation and enforcement would fall to the local authorities, and that was a big concern and part of their additional reason on top of the public health concerns for opposing Senate Bill 307. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hello. Joint Committee members, Mike Rocklin. I'm a health and safety professional. Am I talking too close? Thank you. I'll back off a little bit. I'd like to make 3 points. One is, first of all, I deal with education on an evidence-based, scientifically peer-reviewed basis. So I look at the high quality of evidence to look at this stuff. And from a public health standpoint versus a prohibitionist standpoint, I think we can solve both. Number one, in terms of public health, we have issues about smoking. Well, smoking isn't the predominant use. There is also vaping and dabbing and all sorts of other methods to consume as well as eating. So there's various methods to consume cannabis. In terms of smoking, what I've seen work very well is have it outside. In lieu of that, ventilation works well for any kind of capture of smoke, vapors, etc. So ventilation can be a source of control. And in terms of prohibition, we found that the best method so far, from what I've seen, is legalization, which gets the conversation elevated. People aren't hiding. We can do other things, such as what we've seen the last 2 years in the state. So 2 points. One is on what previous speakers have said about tourism. We're a big tourism state. So if we can do that right, what tourists expect is having a safe place to consume. Okay, so that's an issue. We need to find out where and how and let them know. Plus, we have a significant community interest, especially on the coast and certain areas where they count on tourism for the economy. So not to discount some of the issues, but that's really important in balancing. And finally, to protect youth. So if we want to protect our kids, one of the things we already have in OLCC is messaging, standard messaging, and in terms of work permitting, telling people what to do, checking licenses, making sure nobody under 21 comes in. So all those things factor into what I heard earlier Leland Berger say about rulemaking. I think we can solve this, and in terms of the task force, look at this at the same time, make sure it's working well, do some studies, pilot, things like that. And I've talked to the City of Portland. I think they're interested in helping out. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Question for Dr. Hedberg, and that is, how do cigar bars and hookah lounges get past the Clean Air Act?
So, Co-Chairs Burdick and Leininger and Co-Vice Chair Representative Wilson, they were grandfathered in. So at this point, it's not that there are new hookah lounges or new cigar bars, but there was a provision. So again, from our standpoint, we are not supportive, but that was one of the compromises to the Indoor Clean Air Act. But from a public health standpoint, we would much prefer that hookah lounges, cigar bars, that again, if people are going to consume tobacco, different now than marijuana, but that they're doing it outdoors and not within the confines of a building. Again, the cigar bars and hookah lounges. So the grandfather clause.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Prezonsky.
Yeah, Madam Co-Chair, I apologize for the representative from the AOC. You made a statement regarding that you've seen studies or some type of data showing that where you have a hookah bar, that youth association with use of tobacco is greater. I'm wondering, is that a study? Or what is this, anecdotal? I'm just trying to figure out what this is being based on.
Thank you. Co-Chairs Burdick, Leininger, Senator Prezonsky. I would have to do some research on that. It was actually something that came out of a meeting with OHA when we were working on tobacco retail licensure. So well, I would defer to our OHA partners to let me know where that information came from.
Well, since you made
from
the statement, I assume you had seen the data, but whoever has that data, I'd love to see that data because I've not even heard that anecdotally.
Can I just, yes, so Co-Chairs Leininger and Burdick and Senator Prezonsky, some of those data come from our Oregon Healthy Teen Survey where we looked at what the rates of hookah use specifically in the counties where there were hookah bars, those facilities, compared to counties that did not have hookah bars. And hookah was used more by the teens in those, in the counties that had hookah bars. So so those, but we can get you the exact numbers. But again, those do come from our data in evaluating what the impact of allowing hookah lounges was.
Okay.
Better, yeah. Have a comment?
It's not a question, trust me. The federal government has a Clean Air Act, which deals with the air, industrial pollution, things like that. Oregon took a step further when we did the Indoor Clean Air Act, and I was here when that happened, and it was based on a UN study. And if you read the executive summary of that UN study, it connected secondhand smoke to all sorts of things. But if you read the actual study, the connections weren't there. So what we're doing isn't based on real science. What we're doing here is based on political science. Okay, just what I'm saying. So, you know, I know marijuana is different than other types of smoke, but the reality of it is that we have restricted private business in a whole lot of ways based on pseudoscience. Just wanted to put that on the record.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. So thank you to the committee, to the panel, and we will invite up some additional speakers. We've got... Did you have an additional comment?
Oh, no.
We have, please, Stacey Urigay, Paul Lewis, and Shelley Cravens. And then next up, we will have Jackie Sabutz, and Scott Winkles, and Thomas Ramella.
Good evening, Chairs Leininger and Burdick, yep. Members of the committee. For the record, my name is Morgan Cowling, and I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition of Local Health Officials. So I have the privilege of working with the 34 local health departments across Oregon that run local tobacco prevention programs, enforce the current Indoor Clean Air Act, and overall work to keep our communities healthy. I won't repeat what's already been said, but we're currently in opposition to both Senate Bill 307 and 308. We're, as was mentioned by other public health advocates, concerned about the weakening of the Indoor Clean Air Act. Specifically to Senate Bill 308, in its current form, it looks primarily at the economic impact of social consumption and not at the public health impact, the community impact, the public safety impact, or on the enforcement structures and mechanisms and impact on our health department's current work to enforce the Indoor Clean Air Act. So thank you, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Great. Good evening, co-chairs Burdick and Leininger, members of the committee. My name is Paul Lewis. I'm a practicing pediatrician. I've been working here in Oregon for over 20 years. I also serve as the Tri-County Health Officer for Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties. And I've also got the support of the Government Affairs for the entire three-county area, 1.6 million people, about 43% of the state's population. And we uniformly oppose the Senate Bill 307 because it fails to consider the consequences of its implementation to child, youth, and adult safety. I was one of two people to serve on both the OLCC and the OHA Rules Advisory Committees, and I'm here to talk to you and urge your support in this opposition today, specifically because despite my excruciating experience on both of those committees, simple common sense measures were not taken to ensure child safety with regard to packaging and dosing. You've heard from other health advocates about the Indoor Clean Air Act. I'll submit additional testimony by tomorrow about the secondhand smoke issue, respectfully disagreeing with the comments just made. There's, believe it or not, a professional association of people who do ventilation, which was recommended as a method. They go by the long name of the American Society of Heating, Refrigeration, and Air Conditioning Engineers. They formally include marijuana smoke as tobacco smoke for the purposes of their work, making them equivalent. And they also, interestingly, state there is no ventilation system adequate to eliminate environmental tobacco smoke. In preparation for this, I chatted with friends and neighbors. None of them want to live next to a place that is ventilating many, many people. Exhaling marijuana smoke. The other thing mentioned earlier was social normalization of consumption at these temporary events and cannabis lounges. And as a pediatrician and a child advocate, it's very important to us that it be used as intended by the original legislation and not more widespread.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Greetings, Madam Co-Chairs and members of the committee. I feel a little out of sorts today. My name is Stacey Marie George. Everybody pronounces it incorrect. It's okay. I am a member of the OMMP community as a patient and an advocate. I thank all of you for allowing me to have a state to where I could come and be able to save my life. I have chronic myelogenous leukemia. I moved here with 51% in my bloodstream. After 2 years of being in the state of Oregon and using cannabis with my chemo, I am down to 11%. And it's because of the state of Oregon. Had I not had cannabis, I wouldn't have been able to tolerate the chemo. But now we run into another problem. I have a 10-year-old daughter. I do not medicate around her. I do not believe that because she knows that I use cannabis, I smoke cannabis, I eat cannabis, she's aware of what it's for, and I don't believe that increases her chances of smoking or using cannabis because she's aware of it. I think that just educates her and makes her aware of it. It's like a 10-year-old walking next to a bar down the street isn't going to drink because there's a bar there. There's an outside environmental influence that happens, not just being around the environment is going to make it happen or take something else. It's very frustrating to have to medicate as much as I do. Right now I'm on chemotherapy. I have a blood clot in my lung. I cannot do capsules because the amount of THC that I've been on the last year has had an effect on my health. And so I am having to only smoke only and do low doses and medibles. And I do that a lot, and I have nowhere that I can go and medicate with other people. I stick to my home. I know a lot of other cancer patients who could not be here who are stuck in their homes. They can't get out and socialize. There's no community for them because their community has been taken, yet hookah lounges, and I've seen new ones pop up that have, you know, I don't know if they've been grandfathered in, but I know there's one 2 blocks from my house that wasn't there 6 months ago. And it's very, very frustrating that I live within 2 blocks of a bar, and I know people are listening to that carry on at night, but people who have a legitimate medical or recreational use for cannabis have nowhere to indulge or medicate with something that isn't being made legal by the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank That's you all really very much.
Testimony. All right. Thank you to the three panelists. And it looks like thank you, Ms. Cowling, for coming up. It looks like I accidentally skipped you in that final iteration. So now I believe we have Shelby Cravens, Jackie
Sablet.
Okay, thank you. And then let's also bring up Scott Winkles. Thank you. And you can start if you want. And Scott's coming up, and he'll make his way over to that chair.
Okay, thank you, Senator Burdick and Leninger. I really appreciate for you allowing us to be here. My name is Jackie Sablet, for the record. I'd like to speak on behalf of both children in this circumstance and also on being able to smoke in a public lounge. I come from a background where I was taken away from my family because of marijuana. I actually owe Oregon a thank you to my relationship with my parents. I come from Iowa, and I was put in foster care at a really young age because my parents smoked recreationally, they smoked marijuana, and of course that's against the law there, but it took me away from my whole family, and I didn't speak to them for a good 8 years just because of the state saying that marijuana was a bad thing. I came to Oregon, and I was introduced to the medical marijuana program, and I have fibromyalgia and a kidney disease, and it's helped me get my life back also. excuse me. When I first moved up to Portland, I was introduced to a smoking lounge, and to go off of what Madeline Martinez says, it's very true. A lot of people don't have a place to go, and they go into a depression. It gets me so overwhelmed because I've seen it change so many people's lives. I was a manager of this place from 2011 to 2014 until the moratorium took away our ability to have a dispensary in that Clackamas County. I saw a lot of people go into a depression. I saw a lot of people start buying off of the streets and going back to their regular drug dealer. A lot of our veterans were turned away, and they don't have a place to go either. And I believe that our veterans and anybody with cancer, a legitimate reason to smoke marijuana, should have a safe indoor place for us to be able to go and meet people who are like us that may not fit into society in a physical way, or I can't do as active things as most people my age, and the fact that I can smoke cannabis and keep up with them now has really made a big difference in my life.
Thank you. Ms. Cravens.
I want to thank you for giving me the ability to speak today and let our voices be heard. Can you hear me?
You could introduce yourself for
okay.
the record.
My name is Shelby Cravens. I am a patient, and I am a part of the OMMP community. I was in my first week of college when I got in a rollover car accident because somebody hit my car, my friend's car. I was told that I was never going to walk again, or I'd be paralyzed. I deal with pain every single day, more pain than anybody who's 24 years old should have to deal with. I got told that they were going to put me on a morphine pump, and then I would be eventually put on a kidney list, any other organ list, because of deterioration of using narcotics at a excessive rate as what I needed. And so I talked to my family, and I decided to not use narcotics. I am a chronic pain patient, and I do not believe in using narcotics. I believe in cannabis and the ability that I can work 60 to 70 hours a week. I have a townhouse, and the only reason why I have those things is because of cannabis. And because of my CBDs and my THC, I can sleep, and I can go to work, and I can help other people smile while smiling myself. But without that, I was stuck in my room in Arizona, going to school, going to college, wanting to further my life, asking why this all happened to me, and why am I being pumped with 12 different drugs just to take care of my pain? And I was sleeping 17 plus hours a day, barely making it to class, and I chose cannabis. And when I chose cannabis, I left school with a 3.8 GPA. And I'm not able to finish right now, but I'm going to soon.
Thank you for that testimony. I appreciate it. All right, we're close to the – oh, Scott, please. And then we've got time for a couple more people.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Scott Winkles, representing the League of Oregon Cities. I'm going to confine my comments to Bill 308. We will note in Section 1, Sub 1 of 308, we create the list of representatives on the task force. We include public health. We include police. But in Sub 3 of Section 1, in the scope of work, we confine that scope to economic and legal barriers and not to public safety and public health. We believe that should be amended and changed. Additionally, I don't understand what 3C is attempting to accomplish. The phrasing is awkward in terms of identifying laws that we enforce that interfere with other laws. I think that should be clarified.
Thank you. That's great. Is that the total?
I had a bet that I could do it in 30 seconds, so yeah.
What's that? Great.
Who's paying?
Outside.
Who's Rob in the back?
Okay.
Outside.
He gets first prize, doesn't he?
We've got a couple more people who've come here to testify, so I'd love to see if we can get at least a couple of these folks in. We have Jesse Preston, and then we have three people who want to testify together. I'm going to see if you might be able to have one of you testify on behalf of the group, Teresa Marchetti, Christina Corsi, and Brandon Goldner. Could we have one of you folks come up? Okay.
I didn't make the list either. I heard my name earlier, and then
is that right? Was it Thomas? Yeah, and I was going to ask you to come up too. So, Jesse, one of the three City of Portland folks, if you could possibly have just one of you come up, and Thomas Ranchella. Does that work? Thank you. And those will be our final speakers for today. Thank you.
Hi,
go ahead.
Good evening, Co-Chairs Burdick and Representative Leininger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Teresa Marchetti. I'm the Livabilities Programs Manager for the City of Portland. The cannabis program is one of the programs in my portfolio. I'd like to take this opportunity on behalf of the City of Portland to thank members of this committee for the extremely hard work that you all have done in the last two sessions and into this one, forging into this new territory. We appreciate the thoughtful discourse and commitment that each member has shown to ensure that Oregon's cannabis policies are reflective of the community values. In the City of Portland, we've licensed over 200 marijuana businesses, either in the recreational market or as medical dispensaries through a local ordinance. The legislators' direction to move towards basically an unprecedented collaboration between state and local regulation authority has really ensured that several significant steps have been taken to help continue the professionalization of the industry. We've seen engagement with the community that has definitely reduced fear and increased trust. and led to what we think is a very successful first year of implementation. We've made a commitment to the industry that compliance with local and state regs will afford them the same protections as other businesses, including an expectation that others that are not playing by the same rules will face consequences. Neither state licensing authority at this time has the ability to address illegal operations, so that's been a larger focus for the city of Portland. We believe that Senate 308 is a logical next step in this growing industry, and to further specify those parameters in a with reasonable expectations. In particular, Mayor Ted Wheeler is interested in these discussions within the context of equity, particularly for renters. So we did want to make sure that we spoke to that. Absent any guidelines, we realize that there's a wide spectrum of behavior, and we want to ensure that those that want to capitalize on tourism, special events, social environments, that we continue to have those conversations in a responsible manner.
Thank you so much. And, you know, we're going to keep going a bit after this. I realize that though we will – the future start at 5, we did not start at 5 today. So we have a little more time than I'd realized. So please continue, you two, and then we have time for a few more people after that.
My name is Jessie Preston. I am the executive director of OMSA, Oregon Marijuana Safety Standards Association. I agree that it seems kind of silly to make marijuana legal and then give people nowhere to consume it at. However, I want to make it clear that though I support it only if very enforceable safety standards are applied to it, as well as every other form of marijuana business in Oregon.
Thank you. Great.
My name is Thomas Pamelia. I want to thank you for giving us the opportunity to give an opinion on this. I'm an OMMP patient and a consultant in the cannabis industry. I'm also a writer. I have a blog, and I've written extensively on the social consumption side of legalization. Here in Oregon, we passed Proposition 91, giving the OLCC the opportunity to regulate this. They've shown that they do not have a respect for the breadth and depth of the demographic here in the state of Oregon, and that the new legislation that is being brought forth on social consumption is extremely narrow-minded. I would like to bring up a precedent that if this is passed and you give the OLCC the opportunity to regulate the consumption of cannabis, there will be people that will go out and find a way to do this under their First Amendment because they do not want to be associated with liquor. They do not want to be associated with growers and producers that are associated with liquor, and that the consumption is a right amongst mature consenting adults. That when a place is public, that when people are coming there, it is assumed that if you're in a public place, that the air is clean. But the moment that you create a private event, it's no longer public. There can be a connotation of consent amongst adults that this is going on all across the nation in other contexts, and it should happen with cannabis as well. My other point is with Oregon. The gentleman earlier brought up that we have tremendous tourism in this state that bolsters so many locations that are actually pretty remote and pretty rural and depend on that industry. That's where the ethical money is to be made with cannabis and tourism and bringing people to this state and to our economy to spend their money and leave again. You guys took away residency on Proposition 91, brought a whole bunch of people to live here, all right, that we didn't vote for that. And now we're seeing the result of that now. And so if you go forward and give the OLCC this opportunity to regulate the consumption, you're going to have to contend with First Amendment rights, people.
Okay, thanks a lot. I think Senator Farioli may have a question for this panel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's for Ms. Marchetti.
Yes, sir.
I heard the support for 308. I didn't hear a position on 307.
We are also in support for 307 and continuing those conversations.
Great. Thanks. Any other questions for this panel? I'm actually going to call up the other people signed up after Senator Farioli's question.
My question, ma'am, I have no question. That was answered, except that I'm distressed to find out that once again, because of an unusual alignment of stars, the city of Portland and Mayor Wheeler and I appear to be on the same side of an issue.
I'm probably wrong.
All right. Well, there you
Thank
go.
You.
Thank you so much for being here. And I have Christina, to just continue that theme, we have Christina Corsi and Brandon Goldner of the City of Portland also signed up to talk, unless you're all set.
We're all set.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now, if anyone else would like to testify, please do that. I'll ask you to state your name for the record.
My name's Kimberly Strand. I live in Kaiser. There were 6 smoking lounges in the state of Oregon until last year. Now there are 2 smoking lounges. One has been open for 6 years, and they have a wonderful community of people. They have taken a dilapidated building, and they rehabbed it. They have a community garden. They do a lot of outreach. And they're right. The people that come there were depressed. They were shut in. Many of our people walk to the location. And they're consenting adults. The average age of the person that goes to the smoking lounge is not your 20-year-old kid. It's the 45 to 75. They've already worked. They paid their dues. You know, you can't take their job. Their kids are grown. And they would like to be able to come in and play some pool, play some bingo, Texas Hold'em poker. We have arts and crafts. We do a lot of things for the community. And the biggest thing is the health benefits to these people who don't feel like they're leopards, because everybody else is saying, oh, you smoke marijuana. We want to keep you in your closet. So, no, you don't get to play pool. You don't get to be on a pool league. You don't get to go anywhere because you smoke pot. That just doesn't make any sense to us. So we opened as a medical lounge, and just the ability for people to get together and know that they're not the only person who's in this pain, or that they have people that they can reach out to. Sorry, it's very emotional for me. I've watched people's lives change completely because they have a community that they can rely upon. And so I would invite you to come and look at the 2 lounges that are operating in the state of Oregon. PGN Lodge has been operating in Kaiser, and I even hate to say that because now I think you guys are all going to mess with us. But you know what? I'm here to take the bullet. I invite every one of you to come over and see the community and meet the people. And we have massive ventilation. So, you know, and the secondhand smoke, you know, I'm going to agree with this guy over here. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Thank you. All right. So I don't see anyone else coming forward to testify. This is obviously an issue that will. Oh, we do have another person. Wonderful. And I'll invite you to state your name for the record, please, and then give your remarks.
My name is Victoria Wright. I'm an OMMP patient. I am also an advocate for the program as well. And I'm also trying to have a business in this industry, which is becoming more and more difficult. But I'm also an advocate. I'm also a patient. And without this medication, I'd be dead. What I do know is that I've also worked in several of the recreational centers in town before they were closed. And the people that we were serving had no place to smoke or no way to ingest or to consume their medicine. Most of them live in medical buildings that don't allow them to consume their medical cannabis. And when you can't consume to medicate proper, you can't feel better. And if you don't feel better and you're not functional, you can't take care of your children, you can't go to work, and you can't pay your bills. If you can't do any of those, you're not functional anyway. So having access to medical cannabis isn't actually having access to medical cannabis if you can't consume it. And when we do have people that live in medical buildings where they're restricted because they're on SSI or they're on another structured income, and according to the guidelines of where they're living, they can't consume this medicine, it actually puts them in a catch-22 because they have it available, but they can't use it. That's not helpful. So we really do need to do something for our patients that actually can't advocate for themselves. And that's why I'm actually up here, is to advocate for those who cannot come here and advocate for themselves. When we look at everyone, we have to look at the entire community. In our community as a whole, we're losing a lot of voices that can't speak for themselves, that really do need someone to come up and speak for them. They live in communities that they can't do this, and yet we've said it's okay. it's a catch-22, and we need to fix those holes so that they can do this. Thank you for your time. I do appreciate it.
Thank you so much. All right, I am now going to close the informational hearing on Senate Bills 307 and 308, and we'll adjourn the meeting until next week. Get home safely, everyone. Thanks.
At 5 o'clock.
Meeting until next week. Get home safely, everyone. Thanks.
At 5